Okay, we're in Song of Songs tonight. I did not do verse 16 of chapter 4 last time. If you notice in your Bible, mine is broken in paragraph divisions. And 16 seems to go with chapter 5, verse 1. And that's the way I'm interpreting it. So I didn't do it last time. We'll do it this time. As I've mentioned in your notes, this seems to be a response from the bride to the groom's words in chapter 4, verses 12 through 15. And I think that response goes through verse 1 of chapter 5. She has been called a garden. And now she's going to respond and say, "Yes, I'm a garden, and I hope the winds come and blow my fragrance to you." That's her response, okay? So that seems to be what it is. It's been very helpful to me when I go through here. I'm using New American Standard Version. In my translation, it puts in the margin who they think is speaking. And I went through the whole thing and did that and wrote beside the verses, bride, bridegroom, chorus. And that kind of helped me, because if you just sit down and read this, it is terribly confusing because you don't know who's talking. It's like a play and nobody's remembered to put in there's a different actor. And so I think the bridegroom is responding. The bridegroom picks back up in chapter 5. "I have come to my garden, my sister." And remember, my sister is not what it seems like in English. It's a Hebrew idiom for endearment. It'd be close to our darling or honey. Okay, that's close to what it is. "My bride, I have gathered my myrrh along with my balsam." Now, when I thought of balsam, I don't know why I kept thinking of balsa wood, but this is different. This is a very fragrant resin that comes from the roots of some plants in the Orient. Okay? Balsam. "I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk." Now, that seems to be a response that, as you know, I think there's flashbacks through here. There's a real question of some kind of morality in the sense of, is this just clandestine lovers, or are these people who are married? Well, I think that they've been married, but it's flashbacks all the way through here. And these flashbacks come sometimes in places that we're not expecting them. Now, apparently, remember we talked about the wedding back over here in chapter 3, and so chapter 5 seems to be during the wedding reception. Now, remember, we're not in our culture. We're in the Orient, and wedding receptions last 7 days. You think it's tough getting out of the church. You'd like to have everybody come to your house for 7 days. 7 days. So I think the last two parts of chapter 5, "eat, friends, drink, and imbibe deeply, O lovers," I think that is the response of the wedding guest. And I think they're saying that. The bridegroom says, "Eat, friends," and the people there are saying, "Drink and imbibe deeply, O lovers," which must be something like us saying, "Good luck on your wedding." I don't know what else it could be. You can't tell from the text that's what it is. Yeah.
This version I have says, "God to the couple."
Yeah. I'm going to be asking you for those. But again, that's the Peshitta. Let me see the front of that Bible you got. No. Well, now yours is the same one I have. That must be a marginal note. It's not in the text. Yeah, that's just there. That's Ryrie's understanding. That's just the man who happened to translate. That's just, he didn't have any more insight than I do. You know, it's just, no one knows. That's why there's so many interpretations here. Okay. Look at verse 2. Now, I think it's the bride again. "I was asleep and my heart was awake." Now, what's that talking about? She's dreaming, wouldn't you imagine? Now, remember back chapter 3, verses 1 through 4, we said probably this was a dream. It was the day before her wedding. Can you remember that, any of you? How nervous you were, the nightmares you had about, "Oh, I know he's not going to show up. Car won't start. Be late at the wedding. Organ won't do." Well, she was having one of those nightmares. Well, this, many commentators think that 2 through 7, or 2 through, 2 through 7 is another dream. Because look what's going to happen to her. "A voice, my beloved, was knocking." And here there's one little section here where the bridegroom breaks in. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my perfect one. For my head is drenched with dew, my locks with the damp of the night. Now what this guy has done, he has come to visit her, at least in her dream, I think, in the middle of the night. Now, this deal about locks damp with dew is, it dews in Palestine late in the evening, or early in the morning, really. And it dews so heavy that during certain seasons when no rain falls, this keeps the plants alive. You can grow crops with this heavy dew. So he has been out running in the middle of the night, okay? And he's come over to her house, and he is his hair is drenching wet from this dew, okay? That's the idea. So he's making a real late visit, if you please. And this is what she says. This sounds so uncharacteristic. Really, just think. She's been saying, oh, I can't wait to be with him. My heart longs for him. He's so wonderful. He looks so handsome. And listen to this now. This is what she says. I've taken off my dress. How can I put it on again? I've washed my feet. How can I get them dirty again? Does that fit at all for her? It's like saying, will you leave me alone? I have a headache. That's just what she's saying, if you can imagine that. She's been just desiring this guy to come see her. She can't live without him. And suddenly she says, I wish you wouldn't bother me. I'm already in bed. I'm dressed for bed. I've washed my feet. If I get up and come see you, I got to wash my feet again. I wish you'd come back later. Now, that just totally doesn't fit her at all that we've read. And that's why these folks have made it a dream. Now, look what happens. I guess she feels guilty about that because there's some form of resistance in here. She just doesn't seem like she's really wanting him to visit that late. In verse 4, my beloved extended his hand through the opening. Now, what this means is ancient doors had a latch, a bolt lock made of wood, okay? There was a little hole in the door where someone could reach in and pull the latch back. But there was also a mechanism where someone inside the house could put a pin in there where you could not move the latch. So he tried to get in the house and couldn't. That's what it's talking about. He put his hand to the door to undo the latch, but it was locked. He couldn't get in. And my feelings, now the word here is the word bowels. If you want to write somebody your own Valentine card, and you want to really impress them, don't say, I love you with all my heart. They're used to that. Tell them that you are a real lover of the Bible and that you love them with all of your bowels. Now, if they have been doing any kind of Old Testament study, they'll know you're just crazy about them. If not, they'll think you're really strange. The ancients put different parts of the body representing different things. The heart was the center of the personality. The lower viscera, we're talking about kidneys, liver, intestines, large and small, that was the seat of the emotions. Now you say, well, that's ridiculous. Have you ever eaten hot sauce too late at night? You'll know why. That's where they put the seat of the emotions. So what she's saying is she just became all emotional. She said, my feelings were aroused for him. Now that's real strange compared to verse 3, where she says, I'm ready for bed. My feet are clean. Leave me alone. Now she's all upset. I arose to open to my beloved. My hands dripped with mirth and my fingers with liquid mirth. Now, one or two things are happening here. And it's hard to tell from the Hebrew text. Either when the man put his hand in to get the latch, he was so perfumed that the fragrances lingered on the latch. Or, before she came to the door, she put on Chanel number 5. Now, I'm not sure if it's him or her. Someone has anointed themselves, okay? And that's what we have here. Well, either one, it sounds like her in my translation, but it may be he. There's even assumptions that the ancients wore so much perfume on their hands that one way, instead, we leave a business card, but one way you could tell if your boyfriend or girlfriend came to see you, they would touch the handle or the door or some part, and it was so strong you could tell they'd been about it by the smell they left. I don't know. That'd be a lot. Okay, so anyway, him or her one is really perfumed. And notice it says, on the handles of the bolt. Well, that's where the perfume was, okay? I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had turned away and gone. Now, it seems to me what's happening, she's having a dream. In the dream, her lover comes in the middle of the night, and she says, listen, I'm too tired, I'm not dressed, go away. And then she starts feeling bad. By the time she gets up and gets dressed, he's gone away. Okay, she just took too long getting to the door. All right, listen what happens to her. Now she's feeling guilty, apparently. My beloved had turned away and gone. My heart went out to him as he spoke. I searched for him, but I did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer me. Now, here's those watchmen again. And this is really a problem to interpret this whole book. I don't know what these guys are doing in here. This is what they do to her. Verse 7. The watchmen who make the rounds in the city found me. Now, look at this. They struck me and wounded me. The guardsmen of the walls took away my shawl from me. Now, it ends right there. It doesn't tell us why. It doesn't tell us what. It just goes back to that refrain, I assure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, find my beloved. It doesn't tell us what's that all about. Now, I think it is a dream, obviously. What apparently happened is, and this is an assumption on my part, okay, in her dream, she goes out into the city in the middle of the night. We're talking about the wee hours, and she is screaming for her beloved. Oh, the one whom my soul loves. Now, can you picture this going down the street in the middle of the night? The guardsmen either are trying to arrest her for disturbing the peace, or think she is someone else and try to grab her and hold her, and she flees and leaves her shawl in their hand. Don't you know those guys were surprised if this is an actual occurrence? This is Solomon's number one girlfriend, the king, and they just gave her a black eye? It's time to move to Saudi Arabia, friends. You know, you just beat up the king's girlfriend. Why that's here, I don't know. Now, many interpreters use this deal about wounded as a reference for Jesus' crucifixion. If you assume this book cannot be an affirmation of sexual love, and if you assume it's got to be something spiritual, got to be, you can see where they're coming from, can't you? But the early interpreters of the church made this so wild that I'm real nervous about doing that. Yet at the same time, I don't know what those watchmen are doing in here. It seems to me that this is not just love poetry. There is some plot that we're not really catching. I mean, there's more here than just a simple lover's poem for each other. You know? It's almost like we're reading a diary that's supposed to have some meaning for us that we can't really grasp. And I assume that's why the early church interpreted it that way. Because the question we all ask is, what is this doing in the canon of inspired Scripture, if there's no real definite meaning for us? Well, I'll come back to that at the end. But anyway, that's one of the problems that we have in trying to interpret this. Now, let me go over to, okay. As to what you will tell him, for I am lovesick. The word lovesick in the last part of verse 8 is a word in Hebrew that means I'm sick or weak, and it came to mean lovesick. Now, in verse 9, the chorus responds, what kind of beloved is your beloved, O most beautiful among women? And what kind of beloved is your beloved? Thus you adjure us. Now, if you look down at verse chapter 6, verse 1, this same chorus is going to say, where is your beloved turned? It seems like she's asking these other ladies of the harem or of the court to help her find Solomon. And they're either kidding her or mocking her or being sarcastic, or it's some other group of women. And what they're saying is, how will we know it's your lover? Describe this fellow for us, and if we see him, we'll help you. Okay? So, in verses 10 through 16, the bride tries to describe her husband or boyfriend the way he tried to describe her back in chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. So now it's her turn to talk about him. My beloved is dazzling and ruddy. What does ruddy mean? Do you ever use the word ruddy in your vocabulary? It's usually used for dirt roads and rain, right? That's ruddy, I guess. What does ruddy mean to you? Brown? Tanned? Reddish. Yeah, this is from the Hebrew word Adam, which means red clay. And so what's she saying? He's suntanned. Either suntanned or he has a reddish tone to his skin. Now, the word dazzling either means physical beauty, he's striking to the appearance, or his character. He has an outstanding character. Which one? I'm not really sure. But to her, he's outstanding among 10,000. If I could paraphrase this, she's saying, if he was in a crowd at Madison Square Garden, I could pick him out in a moment. You catch the lines of love here? His head is like gold, pure gold. Now, again, I think that's reference to what? Color of his hair? Well, his hair is probably black. It's going to be down 12. Probably real tan, okay? Now, she's real tan, too, remember? She looks funny from the other girls because they're all white. They're milk white, and she's been out in the sheep. She's real tan. So he's tan, too. His locks are like clusters of dates and black as a raven. Well, either he didn't wash his hair enough, or she's just trying to say something about the color. So I imagine he has jet black hair, like most Orientals of the Near East do. His eyes are like doves. Now, that's what he said to her. But he says, beside streams of water, bathed in milk and repose in their settings. Now, what's he saying? What's she saying about his eyes? We don't know the color. They're probably brown. But what's she saying about them? Yeah, the whites of his eyes are pure white, right? His eyes are floating in a pond of milk. Well, you know, Peggy hadn't said to me in a long time. These are strange words of endearment. So he's got pretty eyes. They're like doves floating in milk. I assume that they're dark doves floating in white milk, wouldn't you? And so she's just saying, it just means the boy didn't need... What's those eye drops that take the red out? Right. Didn't need Visine at all. He just naturally had white eyes. His cheeks were like a bed of balsam, banks of sweet-scented herbs. Well, I don't know what a bed of balsam is, so I don't. I'm not sure I know what his cheeks look like. Apparently, it's scented kind of root, resin from root. Maybe it's red. I don't know. So maybe she's saying his cheeks are highlighted. His lips are lilies, dripping with liquid mirth. I can't know what that is. His hands are rods of gold set with beryl. Now, beryl is olive green. So apparently he has a Mediterranean complexion. Would you think he's a little greenish tan? I know it sounds unusual, but Oriental people are very olive colored. Yes?
What's the difference between beryl and topaz? Mine says topaz.
The literal is lapis lupsi, which means lopsy or something. Ancient stones are in such a disarray that nobody knows because they change from country to country and century to century. And so it's a pure guess. Stones and plants are a complete guess in the Bible. I mean a complete guess. These are not lilies of the valley. Lilies are very, very rare in Palestine. They only grow in the rocks in the shade. This must be crocuses. So flowers and stones are just impossible with any kind of precision to lock down the Bible. His abdomen is carved ivory inlaid with sapphires. Is that right? Now, what do you think? What do you think that's trying to say? I heard one commentator said, that meant he had toned stomach muscles. I thought, well, I could have said it better than that. Yes, Dorothy?
Someone that's never had a suntan on their stomach, the veins will show through very blue on a very white background.
Oh, you think that's maybe what it is? I thought maybe the boy had a jewel in his belly button. The girls did that, you know. Maybe the king glued something in there. And just, I don't know. Abdomen is carved ivory. His legs are pillars of alabaster set on pedestals of pure gold. Well, what she's trying to say is he's got strong legs. Now, alabaster is a soft white stone. It's often put marble in many translations. And it was used from Egypt, and it was used to make little jars for perfume. In the New Testament, the broken was alabaster jar. So I guess he had a tanned face and maybe a white stomach, but the boy didn't have any shorts because his legs were white. He hadn't been out in the sun with his legs showing, apparently. Oh, yeah, that's the pure gold, huh?
They were white, like above the knees, and then tan where his tunic ended.
Now, that may be very well possible, yeah. I can see that. Well, no, I can't see it. I can imagine that. His appearance is like Lebanon. What's that? Welcome at cedar trees. Again, strength of his legs, apparently. The choicest of cedars. His mouth is full of sweetness, and he is wholly desirable. This is my beloved and my friend. That's a pretty good combination. I like the little phrase. It's always good if your lover can be your friend. Now, the girls, the girls say, I think I'd like to meet him. And so she says, I think I'll look for myself. Look at verse 1 of chapter 6. Where has your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Where has your beloved turned, that we may seek him with you? And she's going to say, no thanks, I'll go myself. Thinking about it. So apparently, that's. I don't know if it's sarcasm or they're, I don't know what's happening through here, really. It's just open to grabs. My beloved has gone down to his garden. Now, from chapter 4, what would you assume garden refers to? The harem. Wouldn't you? If nothing else fits. But it can't fit here because maybe it refers to the Shulamite girl. That's who it refers to back here in verse 4, is her, the garden. But no, see, it's used as a metaphor in chapter 4, verses 12 through 15, for the maiden's love. And so it seems we've got to keep it consistent. Notice what it says, to the bed of balsam, to pasture his flock in the gardens and gather lilies. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine, he who pastures his flock among the lilies. Now, I think whatever else this means, she's asserting in verse 3 that he's faithful to her. Wouldn't you assume that? And apparently, that may be in response to the chorus in chapter verse 1, or it may be in response to the harem. Now, if the harem's the background here, I don't know. Because see, over in verse 8, chapter 6, the harem is going to come up. 60 queens and 80 concubines. So the harem is here. And maybe that is some relation. Anyway, verse 4, the bridegroom speaks. You are as beautiful as Tirzah. Now turn the back of your maps and find a map that shows the land of Israel during the divided kingdom, which will be Israel and Judah. Hopefully, see if you can find a map of the conquest to be better. Now Tirzah is the capital of the northern 10 tribes before the dynasty of Omri. He made the capital Samaria. But Tirzah is a beautiful city. And there's many places in the Bible that are proverbial about the beauty of this place. And he's going to mention Jerusalem. So the setting here, it fits Solomon's day real well, because this, you know, was a beautiful northern city. Now, the word Tirzah in Hebrew means delight or pleasure. Okay, now, in last verse 4, it says, as awesome as an army of banners. Now, that is a very difficult phrase. I've given several Old Testaments out. Some of you read, tell me what translation it is, and read me the last phrase of verse 4 from your translation. Okay, in chapter 6, verse 4, the last phrase. Just call it out. Tell me the translation and call it out. Okay? Okay, terrible as an army with banners. All right, somebody else. That's Peshitta. Uh-huh. What is it?
For my beloved, come as Jerusalem and esteemed as one chosen among beauties.
It's quite different, isn't it? Esteemed as one chosen among beauties. That's the Peshitta. You've got RSV, Donnie. What does yours say? Okay, same. All right. New English Bible. What does it say? And the next one. Next phrase.
Turn your eyes away from me, they dazzle me. Huh.
They left the last part of verse 4. What does it say? Does it leave out as awesome as an army of banners?
Verse 4 says, you are Honduras as Israel, uh-huh.
That's all it has? Mm-hmm. They left the whole phrase out. New Jerusalem doesn't have it all? It left it out, huh? Okay. You have King James, what does it have?
Commonly as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with Bethlehem.
Okay, that phrase is going to appear in verse 10 again. What that means, I don't know. Apparently, it means something. Have you ever seen an army in full dress with the colorful banners, marching banners? Well, it's a dazzling sight. Very colorful, very beautiful, marching in order. That must be, because of the context, because the two cities are mentioned, it must be an army marching in beautiful clothes, in beautiful array. Has to be. Now, verse 5. And this is another verse I have no idea what it means. Just think what we've been reading all through here. Now look at verse 5. Turn your eyes away from me, for they have confused me. We don't know who's talking. We don't know what they're talking about. But doesn't that just disrupt everything we've been talking about? Two young lovers can't wait to be together? Yes.
I'm just wondering sometimes if perhaps what he's saying there is she's so pretty or he's so handsome that they scare each other.
Maybe so. I hadn't thought of that. That's probably good. Did any of your translations have something like that? The reason he asked her to turn away, she's so pretty, it disrupts his... her thoughts hold him captive. That's New Jerusalem Bible. Okay, that's a good thought. Yes. Septuagint? Uh-huh.
The verses are numbered differently in this than they are in these other versions. This is in here, verse 4.
Okay, what does it say?
Turn away thine eyes from before me, for they have ravaged me.
Ravaged, that's the same idea. Okay, good. Yeah. I think awesome would be a good word. Yeah, he's overcome with it. That's good. Thank you all for that. Now he's going to go back to the hair is like a flock of goats. Now verses 5, 6, and 7 are a repeat of chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. Okay. Now we talk about the hair of goats like flocks over the shoulder. Your teeth are like a flock of ewes. The whole family had good teeth. That's what it's talking about. All his teeth were in place. Your temple is like a sliced pomegranate. We say it means they're red, you know. Now, from behind your veil is, he's talking about her again. Now, listen, verse 8, and why this breaks in again. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number. Now, the queens were political marriages like the queen of Egypt, okay? Concubines are legitimate marriage partners, but with limited legal rights. They were not full wives, okay? Now, maidens, the Hebrew word here is virgins. They would be the attendants of the queens that the queens brought in to help them, okay? That's what this is, but it's obviously the harem. Now, why he brings up the harem, I don't know. Look at verse 9. But my dove, my perfect one, is unique. Now, guess he's saying, among all of the harems, she stands out in my mind. Would that be the obvious thing? She is her mother's only daughter. She is a pure child. Now, a little better Hebrew would be favorite child of the one who bore her. The daughters saw her and called her blessed. The queens and concubines also, and they praised her. Now, mine has saying. You have the word saying in the last part of verse 9. That's what? That's New American Standard, just like mine. Mine's in italics, which means what? It's not in the original text. Mine is assuming that verses 10 through 12 is the response of the queens and concubines. But those other translations I gave you don't have that. And so, who is speaking in verse 10 through 12 is hard to know. Possibly the bridegroom still. Maybe it's the harem. Just don't know. But it's going to be very strange, the rest of this. It's been strange already, but this is going to be even more. It seems like the harem is saying, who is this that glows like the dawn? It seems they're saying, yes, she is the most beautiful among women. As beautiful as a full moon, as pure as the sun, as awesome as an army with banners. Now look at this 11. I went down to the orchard of nut trees to seek the blossoms of the valley, to see whether the vine had budded or the pomegranates had bloomed, before I was aware, my soul set me over the chariots of my noble people. Now, friends, that doesn't make sense, does it? Does that make sense to you? I want each of you to read me, just in your translation, verses 11 and 12. The New American Standard. Read it real loud for me, will you? So I can... Yeah, New Jerusalem, excuse me. New Jerusalem.
I went down to the meadow orchard to see what was sprouting in the valley, to see if the vines were budding and the pomegranate trees in flower. Before I knew, my desire had hurled me on the chariots of my people and their friends.
Okay, now what that translation is saying is, Solomon's riding down the street in his fancy chariot, and he has picked her out of the harem as he drove by and set her in the chariot with him. Now, that's what that's saying, okay? Who has that Septuagint?
I went down to the garden of nuts to look at the fruits of the valley to see if the vine flowered, if the pomegranates blossomed. There I will give thee my breasts. My soul knoweth not. It made me as the chariots of Amminadab.
Okay, they are in translating the heap. Of course, now it's using this go down the garden as a sexual thing, right? That's what that's interpreting. Also, that Abinadad is the Hebrew name that's translated noble people. And so they're making it a proper name where these are making it a prince or a noble person. Okay, the Peshitta.
I went down into the garden of walnut trees to see the fruit of the valley and to see where the vine had blossomed and where the pomegranates had budded. And being unfamiliar with the place, I sat in the public chariot, which was ready.
Okay. It's trying to get the word chariot in there, and instead of saying the my noble people, it's saying the public chariot. Okay? You got New English Bible.
Where
11 and 12.
Okay. I went down to the garden of nut trees to look at the rushes by the stream. See if the vine had budded or the pomegranates were in flower. I did not know myself. She made me feel more than a prince, reigning over the myriads of people.
Okay, here this translation is saying that she, apparently, who is the fruits in the valley, that she made him feel very, very important. That's what that's trying to say? She made him feel like a very important person. Okay, Donna, you got RSV. 11 and 12.
Okay, I went down to the nut orchard to look at the blossoms of the valley to see where the vines had budded, where the pomegranates were in bloom. Before I was aware, my fancy set me in a chariot beside my friends.
Okay, that's much like New Jerusalem. Let me admit something to you. When you find, now these are major translations of the Bible available in English. I picked everyone I had up and brought them. When it's this kind of disarray in English text, what does that tell you? The Hebrew is extremely ambiguous, and we do not know how to translate with meaning. Now, if I got to pick one or the other, I think I'll go with New Jerusalem. Apparently, there's still this idea of a parade. He was waiting to see if his young fiance had come of age, was ready to make love, had grown up in her understanding. As he passed by, he saw her among all the harem. He invited her to come stand in his chariot with him, and she was greatly honored. That's what I think's happening, but I don't know. Look at verse 13. Now, who is this? I put chorus out beside mine, because you know why? Because I couldn't think of who else could do it. Come back, O Shulamite. Come back, that we may gaze at you. Now, that's got to be the harem up there in verse 10, 9 and 10. Or it's a chorus, or it's somebody other than the king, right? Because it's plural, that we may gaze at you. Look at the last one, the bridegroom, it seems like. Why should you gaze at the Shulamite as at a dance of two companies? Now, watch what happens again. This is New American Standard. As at the dance of two companies. Some of them have a proper name. Mahanim, okay? RSV has that, Donna. You have that. The Septuagint has, she comes dancing like the camps. Okay? The Vulgate has, the dances of the camps. And the New Jerusalem and New English have, between the rows of dancers. Again, Apparently, there was a public parade. She was honored. She was in the chariot. Some in the crowd said, "Bring that pretty little thing back here." And Solomon said, "You've seen all you're going to see. If you want to see her again, you can come to the party tonight because she's going to dance a little bit." Now, beyond that, I don't know what's happening here. I really don't. And that's all I'm going to do tonight. So let's talk about it. This is the Bible we're in. This is not Romeo and Juliet, not Shakespeare. This is not love poetry. This is inspired scripture. Now, can you see anything in this that is affirming what? What is this trying to do? Okay, here's what people have said. Because you see the obvious problem right there. This is confusing. This is not real specific. There's a million terms. I want to say this. Number one, I think it's an affirmation of physical love. I don't think you can get away from that. I think we in the church need to hear that's okay. That's good. That's great. That's a gift from God. I think it is also a rather veiled affirmation of the possible love between one man and one woman. Now, this is a polygamous setting. There's a harem, right? But she is the favorite, at least at this point, and is trying to show the meaningful relationship that can exist between two people. Would you buy that? Number three, I think there is something here to the fact that marriage is not all roses and mist. There are some problems. And obviously something is happening here. The watchmen are beating her up. She won't open the door. When she does, he's gone. You hear the problems involved in a beautiful love. There are problems. I think that's something it's trying to say. The next one. Because God is called by family terms, husband, father, this seems to have something to do. If this kind of beautiful love and joy can be experienced between two human beings, I think it is analogously saying something that this same kind of intimacy and beauty, white hot heat of passion with problems, can be, should be experienced between God and His people. Now, beyond that, you pay your 2 cents and you give your opinion. Because I'm going to do 1 John tonight. Well, I'm going to do verb tenses. I'm going to jump in down on phrases. I'm going to deal parallel passages. None of that applies here, right? You almost cannot do a historical grammatical approach to this, because even if you know what balsam means, it doesn't help you interpret the passage. Even if you know this Hebrew word means favorite instead of so-and-so, there is really no help here to interpret what this means. Now, the Jews say, as I've told you, that Solomon wrote this when he was young and in love. And he wrote Proverbs when he was in his middle years. And when he got old, he wrote Ecclesiastes because he got cynical. Now, I don't know if I buy that. The rabbis think that's true. Questions or comments? Right. Yeah. And especially if you were a very well-to-do family, she would have the best of all possible cosmetics and perfumes of that day. I think that's very true. Yeah, people in a desert area don't have much water, don't take baths very often. How wonderful. That's like, I've always amazed me. You know that passage in the New Testament says that eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table about the Gentile girl with the sick girl? Did you know they used to wipe their hands? They don't have napkins, so guess what they used? They used the white bread. And so they would wipe their hands with the bread and the dogs would eat it. Well,
the watchman thing, the would the fact that she was a Shulamite have anything to do with it? Would it be a racial barrier, or was she too young? As far as, was there a pecking order in the harem?
I hear what you're coming at. Shulamite is a town in the Valley of Jezreel, so it would be inside the Promised Land, so it wouldn't be a foreigner. She was suntanned, which made her somewhat unusual in that day because she'd been out tending the flock. I really think she was disturbing the peace. If it's not a dream, if it's real, she was screaming in the middle of the night, and the watchman said, "Hey, cool it," and she just kept saying, "Oh, help," and they were trying to restrain her, and she got hurt, apparently, if it's literal. And I really think it seems to me to be a dream, a nightmare, like chapter 3. And she went to the door to see if he was there?
Yeah.
Well, that's possible. I've sure had dreams I thought were that real, you know, and just you get up and try to talk to the people you've been dreaming about.
At 3:30.
Now, we're not going to rationalize your odd behavior from Song of Songs, no. You thought you heard a doorbell at 3 o'clock, went and answered the door. I was going
to
say, was there perfume on the handle? Isn't that something?
That might be one explanation of why it was cut off without any.
Right. And maybe why there's such ambiguous Hebrew about the chariot and all. That seems to be part of this. Well, you catch the difficulties, but I want to go through this verse by verse just to show you that all my life I've heard people say, the Bible says it, that settles it. Okay? This is Bible. Just because the Bible says it doesn't settle anything here. Do you agree with that? Now, I think as Christians we should read this, but I tell you one thing, it's going to be a long day before I go back through Song of Songs. This has nothing for me that I know of. Nothing that I can sense. Yes?
Could it be possibly that what she's relating there is actually what happened? I mean, she came over to visit her when he didn't want anybody to know that he was around a little early.
Mm-hmm.
And she was scared. She said, "Hey, no." And he
got mad and left.
Out and headed back toward the harem. And she said, "No, I don't want to go back there."
Yeah.
She ran out and she got into the part of the harem that she didn't have any business. The guard said, "Get back to your room." And she did. And went and walked her.
Of course, what you could say is, if that, I hear that reasoning, and that would be she felt rejected because she rejected him, but when the parade came by, she was one picked to be publicly acclaimed. Yeah, that's as good as anything I've read, and what we ought to all do is write a commentary on this and all sell it. Okay, well.